This is Pittsburgh Explainer from 90.5 WESA. Every week, we help you catch up on the headlines from southwestern Pennsylvania. It's Friday, October 30th. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Liz Reed. More than 2 million Pennsylvanians have already cast their ballots for this year's election. Many counties will begin tabulating those votes on November 3rd, Election Day, but it's anyone's guess when that counting will be complete. Here to lay out a few possible scenarios for what we could see next week is WESA's Government and Accountability Editor, Chris Potter. Chris, nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I know county elections offices can begin counting ballots at 7 a.m. on Election Day, but does that mean they will?
No, and in fact, several counties in recent days have made clear that they do not intend to begin counting on Election Day. In our area, Beaver and Butler counties in particular have said they are waiting until Wednesday, November 4th. Greene County as well, Cumberland County, a handful of these folks. These tend to be smaller counties so far for the most part. The concern has been, we know that on Tuesday, November 3rd, Election Day, we expect to be slammed. We're small offices. We don't necessarily have enough people to count all of these ballots. So we're just going to hold off on the mail-ins until then. The concern, of course, is that President Trump has made no secret. He said very publicly that he thinks the election should be decided on November 3rd. And that raises the question of, you know, about whether he and his supporters, how they will look at the fact that more ballots may be coming in after he may want to call the election for himself, or regardless of how the election turns out, because he certainly cast aspersions on 2016, he may decide to say that this election is fraudulent, that Pennsylvania's results can't be trusted. So this is the concern that people have, even though in and of itself it's not nefarious at all, that some of these counties may say we just need a little more time to get this underway.
What will your team be watching for on Election Day?
Everything, sort of. And I want to say it right at the outset. You know, I mean, I think certainly here in Allegheny County, I don't know of any reason to expect chaos. You know, back in 2016, I think we're all worried about sort of what could happen here. And back in 2016, there were very similar concerns. And if you don't remember 2016 very well in terms of the actual conduct of the election, it's because not much happened. A lot of these fears didn't materialize. But one of the things we're keeping an eye on will be things like voters having their credentials challenged at the polls. This is something that's already happened in Allegheny County years ago. Back in 2004, there was an effort by Republicans to challenge the votes of college students, in particular at the University of Pittsburgh. And there were big lines, and there was sort of controversy about that sort of thing. That's one potential area for problems. Of course, there are concerns that there may be some sort of voter intimidation tactics taking place at polls. We don't have any specific knowledge of anything like that happening. Again, that's the kind of thing we worried about 4 years ago. Didn't materialize. Let's hope it doesn't materialize this time. But there are election protection folks who are out there gearing up for just this kind of thing. They will have, I think they're calling them voter guardians, who will be at the polls to look out for anything untoward. So we'll be looking for legal challenges. We'll be looking for sort of tensions at the polling places themselves. And we will, of course, be watching because Allegheny, as you said, is one of those counties that will begin to unwrap the ballots and start to process them through at 7 a.m. on Tuesday. So we actually, in some ways, will actually have a bunch of votes earlier than we used to in previous years, because they'll have spent all day counting the ones that they already have in the warehouse now.
Back in 2016, we knew that Donald Trump was going to become president around like 3-4 a.m.
Right.
You know, the day after that election, that night or early the next morning, depending on how late you stayed up. What can we expect this year? Like, when will we know who the next president is?
I mean, that is the big question, is it not? I hate to sort of prevaricate about it or dance around it, but we don't really know. What we can say is this, is that during the primary, it took a few weeks for Philadelphia in particular to finish counting its ballots. And of course, we're expecting a lot more ballots this time around. So there is this concern that we could have a few weeks for a place like Philadelphia. And again, a lot of Democratic votes there. Donald Trump has made a lot of noise about trying to, you know, about raising questions. Bad things happen in Philadelphia. He said at one point,
right.
Which is like the one bipartisan statement he may have made in this entire election.
That may be a uniquely Pittsburgh perspective.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like hatred of Philadelphia is a broad Pennsylvania phenomenon, and you can find it in Philadelphia as well, in my experience. But so at any rate, that could take weeks. We'll see how it goes elsewhere. But what we can say is that there's some pretty hard and fast deadlines here, right? So by law, and this is not a thing that we in Pennsylvania did. This is Congress set these kind of deadlines. By December 14th, that is the drop-dead date. That is when each state has to basically convene its electoral college electors and make things happen. There's a date a few days before that, December 8th, which is called the Safe Harbor deadline. And that's states don't have to meet that deadline, but what Congress has said is if you can certify your election results by December 8th, we will accept them as gospel. There will be no effort by Congress to challenge them. So what you really want in Pennsylvania is to hit that December 8th date. The question is, of course, is not just how long it will take to count the ballots, but then will there be legal challenges following them? And I think everyone sort of expects that there will be. There have been legal challenges before, largely having to do with mail-in ballots and the deadlines through which they can come in. The Supreme Court upheld earlier this month a state Supreme Court ruling that said if a ballot is postmarked on November 3rd but doesn't reach the elections office until the following Friday, it can still be counted. The Supreme Court has made clear that it decided to allow that to go through, but it may well revisit this issue after the election. And so the question really becomes, with all of those legal challenges, will we meet this deadline? I guess the only historical consolation is people remember Florida back in 2000. And, you know, there's a lot of concern that Pennsylvania will be the Florida of 2020. Even Florida, although in our minds it seems like it took forever, the Supreme Court in the Bush v. Gore decision had that ruling in hand, I think it was December 12th. So they still managed to make that December 14th date. So people can buckle up. If they can just kind of hold on, we're going to get through this together by mid-December, one way or the other. And what happens after that, we'll just have to see.
Well, we've all been learning to practice a lot of patience in 2020. It doesn't sound like that's going to change anytime soon.
Yeah, I've been learning a lot of deep breathing exercises, so you're right.
Potter, thanks so much for your reporting.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
It's time for a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is America Amplified.
With the election just days away, how are you feeling?
What in the hell is going on?
How do we move forward?
Has enough changed? No.
I'm Rose Scott from WABE in Atlanta.
And I'm Luis Hernandez from WLRN in Miami.
Join us for a special national series.
In a time focused on the candidates, we want to focus on you.
It's America Amplified, Election 2020. Your voice counts.
This week, Pennsylvania saw its highest daily COVID-19 case count since the start of the pandemic. More than 40,000 people have tested positive for the coronavirus this month alone. Allegheny County is helping drive these high numbers, and public health officials say that the virus has spread to every corner of the county. At various points during the pandemic, certain segments of the population were most affected. First, it was nursing home residents. Then it shifted to young adults and people who had traveled out of state. But the county's health department says the growing number of infections doesn't appear to be coming from any particular source. Here with more is WESA's health and science reporter, Sarah Bowden. Sarah, welcome back to Explainer.
Hey, Liz.
Can you just expand on that idea? Like, what does it mean that they can't trace cases to a particular place or behavior?
Basically, Dr. Deborah Bogan, head of the county health department, says that many infections are contracted in small groups. Basically, people are getting too comfortable taking their masks off around family or friends. But otherwise, infections are spreading everywhere. Schools, bars, restaurants, nursing homes, workplaces. The only pattern is that it's this small group transmission.
Now, hospital systems around the country are being strained by the number of COVID-19 patients needing care. How are we doing in Pennsylvania?
Right now, things are fine both statewide and locally. On Thursday, Dr. Rachel Levine, Pennsylvania's Secretary of Health, said at one point during the spring, some 3,000 Pennsylvanians were hospitalized with COVID-19. Right now, it's just slightly more than 1,200 people hospitalized. The majority of the state's hospital beds, airborne isolation rooms, and ventilators are available. Things also look good on the local level. And I'm told that medical facilities have the ability to increase capacity if needed. However, there has been a slow but steady increase in hospitalizations, and we know cases can spike rapidly. So just because everything is okay right now, that doesn't mean we should let our guards down. Right now, medical systems in Wisconsin and Texas are under significant strain due to surges of COVID-19 patients, and that can happen here.
How about fatalities? Like, are those tracking along with the number of cases themselves?
We are seeing an increase in fatalities, not as much as the spring. And that's for a number of reasons. One is that physicians have a better sense of how the disease progresses, who needs to be put on a ventilator, what are the warning signs of someone going downhill. Also, we have better therapeutic options than what were available in March and April. For example, steroids, which were prescribed to the president when he was hospitalized. Also, we're seeing a far wider age range of people getting COVID-19 and contracting the coronavirus. And so the older you are, the more likely you are to die from COVID-19. But just because you don't die from COVID-19, that doesn't mean that you're out of the woods. There can be some very significant and serious long-term health effects, that especially for the brain, heart, and lungs. So just because you survive COVID-19, that doesn't mean that everything's okay.
And it's also worth noting, this week in Allegheny County, it was reported that someone in their 30s died.
Yeah, we don't know much about that case, but that's accurate.
So you mentioned President Trump and the treatment he received. You know, he's often made this argument that we're seeing such high case numbers because we're doing more testing. Is there any truth to that?
That's not true. State data show that the percent of positive cases out of all PCR tests have been increasing throughout October.
And PCR, those are the ones that take a little longer to come back, but they're more accurate. Is that right?
Yeah, those are the more accurate. The fast tests are the antigen tests, which are slightly less accurate. So the PCR tests are kind of the gold standard. But what to me is even more telling is, again, hospitalizations, both locally and statewide. We are seeing hospitalizations on the rise. So testing, as everyone knows, has been pretty dynamic and complicated and disorganized. But it's hard to fake people getting so sick that they need to be in the hospital.
There's also been reporting around this concept of excess deaths. These are the number of people who have died from all causes that exceeds the sort of normal number of fatalities that would be expected for a given place and time. There was a report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention that said that since January of this year, there have been nearly 300,000 excess deaths in the U.S., but only 2/3 are due to COVID-19. So what's going on with that? Like, why are so many people dying from non-COVID causes?
Well, they could actually be dying from COVID causes, and they're maybe it's not being documented as COVID, or it's not being recognized as COVID. It's being misdiagnosed. Also, we know that people have been reticent to get health care because they don't want to risk exposure. Also, lots of people are out of work right now, and so maybe they don't want medical bills. Also, people are dealing with significant mental health issues, and we know that fatal drug overdoses have been increasing. In fact, they started increasing before the pandemic. So there's a lot going on here, but public health experts I've talked to suspect that COVID either directly or indirectly is responsible for a lot of these excess deaths.
Bowden, thank you so much for helping us understand these issues.
Yeah, no problem.
It's time for another break. Stay with us.
There are a lot of choices to make in 2020, including at the ballot box. At 90.5 WESA, we're making it easy to choose where to turn for election coverage. Join me, Christopher Ayers, Election Night, November 3rd, as WESA and NPR keep you up to date on election returns both here in Western PA and across the country. Listen on the radio at 90.5 FM, online at WESA.FM, or tell your smart speaker to play NPR.
Thousands of Pittsburgh public school students were slated to return to classrooms in a little over a week. Now, as COVID-19 cases surge, the school board has voted to keep most kids home until January. WESA's education reporter Sarah Schneider has been following this story and joins us now. Sarah, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks, Liz.
Why did the school board vote to delay a return to in-person learning?
Sure. There are a couple reasons, depending on the school board member, of course, but in general, board members said with rising numbers of COVID cases in the region, they thought right now it was still too risky to send all kids back at once. So now they're saying that they are going to phase in students. That phase in will happen in November with groups of students, but most students, the vast majority, will go back in January at some point. And, you know, Pam Harbin is a school board member that noted that with the original plan to have kids go back next month in cohorts, they would only be returning for either 13 or 10 days before winter break. So she made the point that she didn't think it wasn't worth the risk right now.
Can you go ahead and explain sort of the system of how kids were going to go back, this like cohort system, for those of our listeners who are not Pittsburgh Public Schools parents?
Yeah, originally the plan was to have four cohorts, A, B, C, and D. And A and B would be going back 2 days a week, and those would shift, right? So like A would be there Monday, Tuesday, and then B would be there Thursday, Friday, or something along those lines. Group C had opted in to be completely remote, so they would still stay online at home. And then group D was this more vulnerable population. So students with disabilities, students who are medically fragile, that was the original plan, that those students would be back 4 days a week. During the summer, the school board, the district administrators were making this plan. And so that's what parents had known for several months now. At Wednesday's school board meeting, they amended that plan so that now groups A and B will not go back until January.
Kids in group D are going to go back on November 9th?
Correct. So the board members said that the spirit of the amendments that they made to this original plan was intended to send back students who are most vulnerable during this remote learning time. So students who simply are not learning from home. That's students with disabilities, medically fragile students, and then they added English learners. And we reported a piece this week on the, you know, specific struggles that English learners are facing. And many advocates testified this week to the school board that English learners need to be back in person and that they can't keep up with courses taught in English without additional help. And then the board also added to that cohort D, quote, other groups, and they say that will give principals discretion to bring back other vulnerable students who don't fall into those categories, but that do need to be back in person.
Now, I'm hearing that some parents were actually taken by surprise that this was even on the table this week, and some say they recently received letters saying their kids would go back on November 9th. So what are you hearing from parents about this decision?
Yeah. So the school board has a public hearing every month, and it's on a Monday night. And during the pandemic, it has been virtual, and you can submit testimony. And now the school board hears that read by other district employees. This week, more than 150 people signed up for that public hearing, which is a lot. I mean, I sit in on all of these, and that's a lot more than normal. And most of those speakers were teachers. And so board president Sylvia Wilson said that after two nights of that public hearing, she called that a campaign. She said, we were hearing from teachers because they knew that this happened. And so she was kind of making the point that it was skewed, and that after the two nights of public hearing, she heard from a lot of parents who said their students don't fall into this cohort D of vulnerable students who will return, but that their kids really need to be back in person for whatever reason. You know, this is really hard. And for younger kids, they really need a parent or an older sibling to help facilitate learning. So even if students aren't falling into that vulnerable category, they might not be learning from home. And she said, Sylvia Wilson said that she heard from a lot of those parents. And as of Monday this week, 70% of students had opted to return in person. And now those students will not be back. Most of them will not be back until January.
So at this point, I know they said basically that students will return to in-classroom learning sometime between January 4th and January 25th. Is there anything to stop them, though, from delaying it again, even until next school year?
They can delay it again. That is always an option. And, you know, board members said they're really getting a lot of input from the county health department as to what to do next and what's most safe. Another point to note is that the school district and the teachers union, the Pittsburgh Federation of Teachers, they're still working on an agreement that would outline how and when teachers return to school buildings. That has not been finalized. And board members, you know, brought that up too, as saying that's a concern. How are we going to bring these students back, especially group D, this vulnerable group, if we don't have teachers staffing the buildings, or at least we can't confirm that that's going to happen. So that could continue as well, and that's a concern. The board very easily could delay this again.
Sarah, thanks so much for your reporting.
Yeah, thank you, Liz.
That's Pittsburgh Explainer for this week. Our show is produced by Katie Blackley. Larkin Page Jacobs is our managing editor. You can find all of our news coverage at our website, wesa.fm, and of course on the air at 90.5 FM. I'm your host, Liz Reed. Thanks for listening. Let's talk next week.